age. Mm. So translation, Siddha Goswami said, thus addressing Vyasadeva, Srila Narada Muni took leave of him, and vibrating on his Veena instrument, he left to wander at his free will. Okay, so purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Every living being is anxious for full freedom because that is his transcendental nature. And this freedom is obtained only through the transcendental service of the Lord. Illusion by the external energy, everyone thinks that he is free, but actually he is bound up by the laws of nature. A conditioned soul cannot freely move from one place to another, even on this earth. And what to speak of one planet to another? But a full-fledged, free soul, like Narada, always engaged in chanting the Lord's glory, is free to move not only on earth, but also in any part of the universe, as well as in any part of the spiritual sky. We can just imagine the extent and unlimitedness of his freedom, which is as good as that of the Supreme Lord. There is no reason or obligation for his traveling, and no one can stop him from his free movement. Similarly, the transcendental system of devotional service is also free. It may or may not develop in a particular person even after he undergoes all the detailed formulas. Similarly, the association of the devotee is also free. One may be fortunate to have it, or one may not have it, even after thousands of endeavors. Therefore, in all spheres of devotional service, freedom is the main pivot. Without freedom, there is no execution of devotional service. The freedom surrendered to the Lord does not mean that the devotee becomes dependent in every respect. To surrender unto the Lord through the transparent medium of the spiritual master is to attain complete freedom of life. So, Sutta Vacha, Evam Sambhasya Bhagavan Narada Vasavi Sutam Avantriya Vinam Ranayan Yayodhya Durchiko Munahi. No pictures here. It's interesting, no pictures in the, oh, they're in the middle of this particular line. So, Om Ganat Timidanda Shaganjana Shilakaya Chakshun and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, does anyone know what the name Narada means? I know that. No, the name Narada. What does it mean in Sanskrit? Nara means what?
Nara means
human. Human or man or person. And da means what?
Nara means go down or go up.
Yeah, da is very similar. Da means to go or to travel. So you see, all the names in Sanskrit actually mean something. Even whatever name you get, it actually means something. So Narada basically means the person who goes, the traveling guy. Basically, that's what the name means. You never knew that before? Okay, now you know something new. Anyway, so... also Vyasadeva was mentioned here. What does Vyasadeva mean? Dave means like saintly person. So let's forget about that part of the word. So what does Vyasa mean? That's what nobody knows. I'll give you a hint. There's Vyasa and Samas. It's similar in Hindi, I would assume. But anyway, Samas. Samas means to put together. Hindi is anything or similar?
No.
Anyway. And Vyasa means to divide. So Vyasadeva is the one who divides the Vedic literatures. You understand? Because originally there's one Veda, then he divided it in four, and then he did the Itihasa, the Puranas, the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita, and all these other literatures. They give him the Krishna book. So, and also Vyasadeva is referred to as Vasavi here, which is a name for Satyavati. So many phone calls. Satyavati is Vyasadeva's mother. Does everybody know that?
Yes.
That's really interesting. And who is Vyasadeva's father? What? No one knows. No, it's a different, it's a similar name. It's, anyway, it's Parasaramuni. Parasaramuni. Anyway, Parasaramuni met Satyavati, who was a fisher lady, you know, fisher boat lady. And he took her to the middle of the river, and he said, all right, let's have a kid. And she said, well, and that's not going to work because of all the people around. So he created a mist. And therefore, Vyasadeva was immediately born on this island. Therefore, he's called Krishna Dvaipayana. That means island, Vyasadeva. Got it? That's interesting, isn't it? Anyway, so a little history. A little history. Taking care of business? Or?
That's work.
That's work. That's all right. Yeah, that's all right. He has to do that. So, anyway, so let's get back to the point here. So here's Narada Muni, which means the traveling man. The sage. Muni means sage, actually. So here's the sage who travels, you know, basically, and he's able to travel freely everywhere. And Prabhupada talks about the freedom in relationship to the freedom of the individual soul. Actually, every individual soul has a basic need of what we call autonomy. Maybe you've heard that word before. Autonomy means to make my own decisions in life. Just like a child, when they're first born, they're just like part of you. And they haven't really established their autonomy that much. But after a certain point, they actually do things that you consider to be rascally. You think, why is he acting so naughty now? But they're actually trying to establish themselves as individuals apart from you. Because in the beginning, they don't distinguish between you and them. It's just like the mother and father, that's part of the same body as they are. But then in the beginning, parents often misunderstand the child's behavior and just say, this child's a rascal, he's acting, you know, naughty and everything like that. But the child is just trying to show you that he's an individual and establish that. So that's the need for freedom being expressed, the same need being described here. And if the parents don't recognize that, then the behavior gets more and more frantic on the part of the child. You know, if the parents try to force the child to eat, the child gets more rebellious, isn't it? The more you force a child, the more the child will rebel. And you're just thinking, what a bad child. But actually the child is trying to establish himself as an entity, which is the opposite of the Mayavad philosophy. If we were all one, the child would be content to remain like part of the parents for his whole life. But throughout our lives, we find ourselves as trying to establish autonomy. It's really interesting if you analyze our lives. I mean, even let's say someone gets married. In the beginning, you think, you know, we're one, you know, whatever. Isn't it? And maybe you think like that. But many people do, I've seen in the past. They think, you know, oh yes, whatever I need, you'll provide, and whatever you need, I'll provide, and it's just us in the world, you know, just us. And then after a while, what happens? You find out that they have different personalities. Yeah. That, you know, the man has certain needs, and the woman has certain needs, and not the other person isn't the only person to fulfill their needs. They're not just part of the same person anymore. I mean, it's just like you see, of course, the romantic conception is, you know, they're bonded together, and they're just like that film, Slumdog Millionaire. You saw the film? No, you should see it. I have a copy of it. I can show it while I'm here. And they actually, you know, they come together, or Romeo and Juliet, or, you know, whatever nonsense is there. Not Radha and Krishna, because they are one, actually. It's actually an imitation of Radha and Krishna. But after a while, there's a struggle for establishing one's own self in any relationship, whether it's the parental relationship, the conjugal relationship in this world, or even a friendship relationship. It always comes to the point. So really, or even in Krishna consciousness. I mean, for example, like someone joins the Hare Krishna movement and then you're surrendered brahmachari one day and the next day you're Ritvik. But anyway, not the next day, but, you know, obviously it takes a little while. But you really want, and that's why you find sometimes extreme reactions with people who are part of Krishna consciousness. I mean, you're wondering, how did they become a Ritvik? Or how do they join in the Ryan Marsh's movement? Or how do they, you know, become the, you know, you see, like, extreme things happening. Extreme things. Or let's say in the case of someone who was mistreated when they were young. Then they have, like, behavioral problems like anger and all these other things. And there are actually all these things are due to the desire to tell people. I mean, one of the problems with people who have been abused when they're young is there's a loss of control. That's what they experience it as a loss of control. And so later on in life, psychologically, they have control issues. You know, they don't function so well as team members anymore because they feel like, wow, I got to control my own life. You know, just like they feel the world closing in on them and say, no. Because when they're young, their sense of autonomy was threatened. Extremely by, and you can analyze through this paradigm, you can analyze different psychological. There's the phone again. He has no sense of autonomy from the phone. Anyway, so at least I don't have my Blackberry in my bee bag while I'm giving class. But anyway, other times when there's Guru Puja, I always check my email, but not when giving class. So actually, you can analyze people's behavior in terms of different needs, and especially this need for autonomy is really, really important need. Really, really important need. That's why Prabhupada said, when you have a child, first of all, the child, you can train him up and everything, but after a while, you got to be his friend. Just like I was in Fiji, and dealing with some of the older children, like 17, 18-year-old children, who are actually more westernized than Fijiized. If I can use a word like that, because you know they're actually in contact with the internet, with their friends. You know, it's different than the previous generation. So, one of the problems they have is making the parents understand that they're individuals, and not just part of the parents' plan in life. Like there was one girl who was complaining. She said, "I have my room, and my mother just comes in my room and spies on me, and everything like that." You ever hear that before? He just spies, she won't leave me alone. Maybe you experienced that when you were young, I don't know. Not so much, maybe your father did that instead of your mother. But anyway, but she says, why did she leave me alone? So I had to talk to the mother, she has a need for independence, a need to be herself. And mother says, why? Why? She should just listen to me. And I said, you gotta speak to her sometime. And mother says, I always speak to her and tell her what to do. You understand that? Contradiction in terms? I said, you got to have a conversation with her. I said, I always do, and I just like tell her what to do, and she never listens. I speak to her, and she never listens. I mean, that's a standard expression, especially in Indian culture, isn't it? I said, don't you know about speaking to someone and hearing, and God gave you two ears and one mouth? You're supposed to use the ears twice as much as the mouth. And the mother got upset. She said, you're always taking the part of the kids. Anyway. And I told the other devotees, but you all didn't hear this. I was in Suva, and we had a national council meeting and everything like that. And the kids, not the kids, I mean, these are grown people. They were expressing their desire, the youth forum. The youth forum. They're expressing their desire to do different things, to have an NGO, to do some charitable activities, to help people. And then the oldies, as they call them, they were saying they should work under us. And the kids are no longer kids. They were actually, 25, 30 years old at this point. Work under us. And said, look, you got to trust them. And they said, but what if they do something really bad and ruin it for us? And I was ready to say, but you've already done things really bad. these people are actually committed devotees and everything like that. I mean, yeah, Krishna lets you do things bad, you learned your lessons and everything, so... But they're not going to, we can trust them. You extend trust. But because of the culture, in many sense, the modern Indian culture, or the pre-modern Indian culture, is actually a low trust culture. You understand?
Yeah.
It's a very, very low trust culture. What it does is actually keeps people from expressing their full potential. Like, the one thing is that Prabhupada, when Prabhupada came to the West, I mean, there's a lot of bad things about the Western culture too, you know, like drugs and everything like that. So there's, you don't want to go to either extreme. But the parents, actually in America, had given the kids full rein. I mean, that's the opposite extreme, which is actually we don't want either. Where you just say, kids, you know, if you want to smoke marijuana, we'll buy it for you. We had a lot of parents who did that. Or we'll even smoke it with you, you know. Drink it with you. We'll arrange for some girlfriends. We'll buy you contraceptives, you know. I mean, that's the opposite. We don't want that. I mean, that's wild. It was wild like that. So, but anyway, so Prabhupada came to the West. And then he empowered people. Like Tamal Krishnamurti, he empowered, you know. He said, go off and preach. And these devotees were 21, 22 years old. You know, they were actually a lot younger than the youth we have now in the Krishna Conscious Movement. They were actually empowered to open up countries for Krishna Consciousness, establish BBT, you know, Prabhupada's printing. And their potential was realized. You know, had Prabhupada just said, you know, just, I don't trust you, you know, just stay here, you know, let me put a web camera in your room just to make sure, you know, you're behaving yourself, don't do anything, you know, then the movement would have never been expanded. But Prabhupada actually understood that need for autonomy and need to express oneself. And within reason, because Prabhupada gave us the four regulative principles. I mean, it was actually, Prabhupada was balanced. The Western world was completely imbalanced. And the Indian world was imbalanced because they wouldn't let anyone join Prabhupada's movement when Prabhupada was preaching in India. You know, if God forbid some child wanted to join Prabhupada's movement, the parents would take him in the room and yell at him for about 300 years until he gave up that idea. I mean, we had one girl who really wanted to join the movement. Parents shipped her off immediately to India. You know, she's an Indian lady, Gujarati family. That's the heaviest. Shipped her to India, and then I heard from her about 2 years later. She calls me on the phone. She says, Gurudev, I really want to come and stay at the temple. I'm going to sneak out of my house. She came back to, you know, America for a few weeks. So she snuck out of her house, you know, and came to the temple, told her parents she was there at the temple. You know, she was a nice girl. And her parents started saying, how can you destroy the family? Your mother has a heart attack, I have a heart attack, we have kidney death. You know, I don't know what disease they came up with. But they came up with all these diseases to make the kid feel guilty. Isn't it? You know, you see that all the time. Like I have another case right here in this area of the world where the parents have forced the boy to marry someone. And they said, you know, I have a heart disease, you're killing your mother. I mean, this is standard stuff, isn't it? And you hear these expressions all the time. So anyway, so what the poor girl did was she was put in such a stress, you know, from one hand she wanted to be Krishna conscious, on the other hand she wanted to, you know, she didn't want to kill her parents. She committed suicide. Yeah, that's what happens when you put people in such a conflict like that, you know, extreme conflicts. And she just walked into the river one day and drowned herself. Yeah, very common in Fiji because of that conflict. The children, not only because of Krishna consciousness, they want to be Krishna conscious, because they want to be themselves. And I had another case where one young boy went to medical school, became a doctor, graduated, was a full doctor, then told his father, you know, I did this for you, but I don't want to be a doctor. Now I'm going to do what I want to do in life. And never practiced as a doctor. Pretty good, isn't it? Not pretty good. But I mean, so the point is, that we do need to recognize that need for autonomy in people. And especially in children, you know, you'll see him get more and more like establishing his autonomy as time goes on. And he's, but parents, unfortunately, they think that if a child behaves, their definition of behavior is that he keeps his mouth shut. Right, isn't it? Like if you're in the airport and some child is real quiet, you know, 3-year-old just sitting like this with his hands open, you'll say, wow, you have a wonderful child. Wow, how do you do it? I remember one case, there was a child like that, and we questioned, you know, how'd you do it? How'd you have such a nice child like that? And the mother said, we have a theory, it's called the smacker and a cracker. You heard me say that before. That if the child does what we want, we give him a cracker, you know, some cracker food. And a child doesn't, we smack him. So there's the poor child, like, completely traumatized. You know, he's acting what you would consider to be nice. He's a nice child. But actually, the child is going to have psychological problems later on in life because he's not expressing his autonomy. And we see that. Actually, I see that even the culture I came from. I've seen young men remain with their mothers up to about 45 or 50 years of age. This is the Jewish culture, which is very similar to Hindu culture. They remain with their mothers because the mother is just so overbearing with the child. And you know that, you know, the husband died or something like that, then the poor son is just left being there, you know. Like a mommy's boy, you ever heard of that before? And so, you know, he never gets married. His mother won't let him. And so sometimes the mother even gets envious of the wife when the guy does get married. That's even worse when that situation happens, you know. So the point is that people have this need for autonomy. That's even in the material world. Now, here is the spiritual realm. And Prabhupada explains that actually without Krishna consciousness, you really can't fulfill that need for autonomy. Because you're always being controlled by the three modes of material nature. There's actually no freedom. There's no freedom. Except there's one freedom thing you got. You can choose to surrender to Krishna. And then once you choose to surrender to Krishna, doesn't like his diapers too much. That's all right. Change, Kuro. Change your diapers, Kuro.
Mommy's boy.
Mommy's boy, see?
He speaks the best. He only wants his father.
Mommy's voice. Anyway, so the point is, once you surrender to Krishna, then you become free. Mamchiyo vyabhicharayana bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatichaitan. That verse says, one overcomes the influence of the modes of material nature and Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate becomes established in Brahman. So then one really becomes free. So Narada Muni, he's so free that he's happy when he gets cursed not to remain in one place for a long time. You know the story? Daksha? Daksha cursed him because he convinced Daksha's sons, two groups of sons, the Hayarashas and the Savalashas, to take sannyas. And Daksha became very angry. And then also, Prabhupada said he was cursed by the parents of his disciples. Yeah, because they all got aggravated, Prabhupada, you know, took the kids. And now they were traveling, now they were preaching, now they were serving Krishna. And Prabhupada said, because of that curse, he always has to travel too. So that's actually a sannyasi's curse. Prabhupada said, I'm transferring the curse to my disciples, at least the sannyasi disciples. And anyway, so therefore, when one becomes fully Krishna conscious, even if one's not wandering, one is able to express their free will and becomes more actually an individual at that point, which is contrary to what the Mayavadis say, that when one becomes God conscious, one loses his individuality. But I've seen if someone actually becomes Krishna conscious, there, like it's look at Prabhupada. I mean, he's such an individual, isn't it? And such a personality. And you have, you know, Tamal Krishnamurti is such a he's really an individual, right? Never met anyone like him before. And I mean, just look at anybody who's actually elevated in Krishna consciousness. They're so much different than everyone else. Where'd you go to the Mayavadis? I mean, I'll give you an example. You go to some different Mayavadi groups, and the sannyasis look like came out of a cookie cutter. Did you ever notice that? I mean, like the Swami Narayan sannyasis. Anyone's ever seen the Swami Narayan? You've seen them. You know what I mean. I mean, they come in a whole group together, and it looks like, you know what a cookie cutter is?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a mold for cookies. You know, you go to the dough and go, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, and all the cookies come out exactly like the gingerbread man. You know what a gingerbread man is?
Yeah.
It's like a... Yeah, anyway, you know what it is. And so, So Mayavadis come out, you know, they look pretty much the same. Not that they are the same, but they just like, they're actually pushing down their needs as human beings to be individuals. So it's not really coming out. They're losing their individuality, which is really ridiculous, and they're becoming frustrated and unhappy. That's one of the reasons Mayavadis are unhappy. They're not able to express their individuality. Whereas devotees, the more they advance, the more individual and interesting they become. Really interesting. I mean, as you see advanced devotees. I mean, even comparing Bhaktivinoda Thakur with his son Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, they're completely different, isn't it? I mean, you compare Bhaktivinoda Thakur, householder, and even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to criticized his father. He said, "You're just an attached householder sometimes." You know, so they you know, they're joking. They were joking like that. But still, they're so completely different because they're individuals. Or Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada's whole life is dedicated to serving Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Yet Prabhupada is, you know, completely different personality. And Prabhupada's disciples are completely different personalities. They actually become much more individualistic as they progress in Krishna consciousness, which is interesting. Okay. So I think that's all we have time for this morning. Any questions or comments?
Yeah. When people do behave like so that parents or elder people want to control,
yeah.
How do you approach them? How do you deal with them?
As the kid or the parent?
As the kid.
You have to be empathic with their what they want. Like if the child, it's really easy. I mean, then the child becomes manageable at that point.
No, it's the other way around. When the youths are trying to do something and the elders.
Oh, what do you do about the elders?
Yeah.
How do you?
Can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah. Right.
That's really hard. Teaching little kids, dealing with them is the easiest thing in the world. But old people have been trained in a certain way. They just don't get it.
They just don't let go. That's what.
I mean, that is practically the biggest challenge we have in Fiji.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just don't get it.
It's like even the simplest of the things, you know, maybe at
right. And then they'll argue with you. You know, I got accused. I mean, you know, someone came to me and they said, I won't say any names, but they said, "Maharaj, the old people are really upset with you." And I said, "Why?" I said, "You know, the mature." They didn't say old people. They said, "You know, the leaders of society here are real upset." And he said, "Why?" He said, "You're taking the side of the young people." I said, "I'm not taking their side. I'm just trying to help everybody understand what their needs are." And I said, "You're encouraging rebellion." And I said, "No, I'm just encouraging them to even be," I mean, this is funny, but I was encouraging them to be empathic with you, to understand, even understand you. I didn't say it in those words, but, to be more compassionate. Because we gave one of my seminars there on communication, and I made sure that nobody over 30 came. We had them check the IDs at the door. You know, checking the IDs, like they do in a bar, they check the IDs.
To make sure. What's happening in
there? No, but it was established beforehand, it was for the youth.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, nobody really tried to come in, you know, who didn't belong. So, but basically, I mean, the whole youth actually express themselves. They just wanted to serve Krishna, and you know, they wanted trust from the older people. You know, the need of trust. They wanted to be trusted, and they wanted to be able to use their own, you know, intelligence and imagination and everything like that, and develop things. So now the youth is actually opening up a restaurant of their own restaurant in Suva, in this new mall. I don't know what the name of the mall is, downtown or something. You know, it's an upscale mall. And they're opening up their own restaurant, and they're going to call it, instead of, you know, like a Hindu name, they're going to call it Higher Taste, I think. So it'll appeal to everybody.
Where are they getting financed?
From themselves. I mean, there's many of them.
Oh, okay.
There's many of them, and practically all of them work reputable jobs there.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, they work in the banks, they work for the finance department, the government.
The younger generation uses the intellectual to use.
Yeah.
Go ahead, even in Krishna consciousness, and that's where I think the problem comes. They want to use the intellectual and do things different, whereas they think that this is how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, the older people just function mainly on the basis like, this is the way it has to be, this is the way it has to be. And it is not as much imagination and creativity there. But, you know, and actually our young generation is mostly educated, you know, very educated people.
Very educated.
You know, they're educated at the uni, some of them have postgraduate degrees. Some of them are, you know, CPAs, you know, it's just like, they're not just like from the street, you know, they're farmers, you know, they know what they're doing. So that's even funny, you know, sometimes you have the older generation who's not as educated, trying to control more educated people who are adults. I mean, it's just like, you're just wondering, you know, how can, you know, someone is 25 years old or 30, I mean, you gotta let them have their life, isn't it? And so anyway, but even that begins with a child. You have to respect the child's expression. And if you respect, the child will actually, there'll be a cooperative arrangement, a cooperative relationship. Like if the child says no, you're hearing the child as being offensive.
Yeah.
But actually the child's just saying, you know, I want to decide.
Yeah.
And so if you address the need, if you say, you know, you really want to make decisions in your own life, the child will say, yeah, you're right. Then that no doesn't become so heavy anymore. Then you can just sit down and discuss things with the child. But in the traditional Indian culture, you didn't do that. You know, if I hear no from you again, you're going to get a smack. And the parents, I was speaking to one young man. Actually, he's older. He's about 35, 40. He said when he was young, even if his father looked at him, he got scared.
Yeah.
His father looked at him, he would shake. And I said, how can you have that relationship? I mean, we have a need to have loving relationships, not like fearful relationships. Yeah, the fear. It's a fear culture. I mean,
you can't do anything wrong because dad would be upset.
Dad will be angry with you.
Yeah.
Actually, when the child is doing something wrong, it's the duty of the parent to motivate the child.
Motivate, yeah, motivate. If the child is doing something that's harmful,
just take a stick or whack the child and
run. Yeah. Motivate the child.
You
say, you're doing this wrong. You don't even use the word wrong. When you continue doing this, you should understand how it will affect your life. Like you say, if you don't get good grades in school, okay, how is it going to affect your life? You ask the child, you tell me, what's going to, like 10 years from now, what would you be doing? Do you really want to be a cleaner in a house when you grow up? And the child will say, no. Or do you want to, you know, have enough money, you know, to do whatever you want? And the child will say, yeah, it sounds good, I like money. And then the child gets motivated on its own because it has, you facilitate the child understanding his own goals, his or her own goals in life. Okay. Enough time. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. See, no one came to class this morning. They won't.